Welcome in, podcast listeners. If you are huge Game of Thrones fans, that's all on the Best Of. You can also go watch my Periscope and Facebook. Go read my column at Outkick. If you want Kentucky Derby, NBA, and NHL talk, all that is here, plus a Tyreek Hill discussion with Alex Marvez. Dive in now to the Outkick podcast. Thanks for spending your Monday with us.
Outkick the coverage with Clay Travis live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern. 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Live from the Geico Outkick Studios. Appreciate you starting off your Monday morning with us. We are off and running. A ton to get to. I was out of town on Thursday and Friday over in London, and I had a heck of a time over there. I went to the English Premier League soccer game. Never been to one before. Went to go watch the only one that was taking place in London on Saturday. West Ham United was hosting Southampton, and it was an incredible experience. The game was in the main stadium that was used during the 2012 Olympics. So had an incredible time attending that. It was absolutely outstanding. Probably talk about that a little bit as the show progresses, but we've got a lot to get to. And one of the wild things about everything that was going on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and I flew back yesterday, got back in time to watch Game of Thrones last night, wrote about it. It's up on outkick.com, my website. You can go check it out. We'll talk about Game of Thrones in hour two on this show. You can download the podcast. It'll be a part of the Best Of, will be our Game of Thrones discussion. Hour three will be joined by Alex Marvez. But I was trying to find late Saturday night in London, because we're 6 hours or 5 hours ahead of the East Coast. I was trying to find the Kentucky Derby. As I flipped around in our hotel, we had just gotten back from a pub crawl. Really cool experience. I mean, the wild thing about London, there are many wild things about London, but there are tons of pubs that are older than our country. That is, pubs and restaurants in London that have been open consistently longer than the United States of America has existed. So we went on a pub crawl on late Saturday night all over these different unique pubs with a local British guide, and it was pretty outstanding. And so we get back from that late at night, and I'm like, you know what, I want to watch the Kentucky Derby. So I'm flipping around on all of the television stations trying to find the Kentucky Derby. And then I flip over, and I'm like, you know what, I'm sure I can find it on Reddit, and of course I can. And so I stream it on my phone, watch the Kentucky Derby, immediately turn it off because I see that a horse has won and it's late. It's like 12:30 or whatever it was in London at the time, after midnight. Go ahead and turn off my phone because we're going to get up the next morning, get ready, and then fly back to the United States. And I turn off my phone to go to bed. And when I wake up the next morning in London, my phone has blown up, and it is everybody reacting to the chaos that took place in the Kentucky Derby and the replacement of the favorite, who would have been the sixth or seventh consecutive favorite to win the Kentucky Derby, with a huge long shot because of a complaint about a basically lane violation, for lack of a better term. And so I was stunned. I turned it off. I did not know anything about the 20-minute wait in time. I immediately went ahead and turned off my phone, went to bed, had no idea about the controversy until I woke up the next morning. Probably a lot of you, I bet, went ahead and turned it off too. I bet a huge percentage of Kentucky Derby watchers, as soon as you saw who won, you went ahead and turned it off instead of waiting around and realizing that there was going to be a complaint about a rules violation and that it was going to take 20 plus minutes to resolve, and that ultimately the winner of the race was going to be changed for the first time in the history of the Kentucky Derby. And as a result, it was absolutely wild, but this is what it sounded like on television on Saturday afternoon, evening, if you were watching.
Maximum Security keeps on fighting. War of Will is there too as they come to the final furlong. It is Country House on the outside. Maximum Security soaked at game. He keeps battling on. Maximum Security. Country House 1-2 down to the line. Maximum Security wins the Kentucky Derby.
So for the first time in the history of the Kentucky Derby, the horse that crossed the line first has been disqualified. After the objection, Country House wins the Kentucky Derby with Flavian Pratt at 65-1, one of the longest shots in history to win the Derby.
So this is wild. Even the president got in, and I don't even understand this tweet, but he said it was not a good decision. And then he said, only in these days of political correctness could such an overturn occur. The best horse did not win the Kentucky Derby, not even close. I don't really know how political correctness factored in the decision here, but this was a wild decision. The owner of Maximum Security, Gary West, who is said that the decision was egregious and said he's still pondering his next step, including a possible appeal. I think this is the most egregious disqualification in the history of horse racing, and not just because it's our horse. This is what he told the AP. And the runner-up was a 65-1 long shot. And one of my friends won that 65-1 long shot. That was one of the text messages I got, was that a buddy had won $3,000 as a result of this. And a lot of you out there lost money as a result. This is just wild. We had a lengthy review of the race, and we interviewed affected riders. We determined Maximum Security drifted out and impacted the progress of War of Will, in turn interfering with the 18 and 21. Those horses were all affected by the interference. And as a result, Maximum Security was dropped all the way to the end. This is just a mess. I don't really understand how this exactly happened. First time ever that we have seen this, and it's the first objection to be filed since 2001. So this is a wild kind of situation, and we'll maybe unpack this a little bit. I honestly watched the replay and everything else, and I didn't even know this was a rule. I mean, it makes sense in retrospect that it would be a rule, but prior to this, I thought that horse racing was like car racing, that if you had the lead, you could adjust your line and try to block somebody from coming up beside you and taking over your lead, just like you would in car racing. Anybody who's watched NASCAR has seen the car behind try to pass the car in front, and the car can make a move to try to maintain its lead. It's pretty standard. And so I didn't think this was a violation of the rule at all. I'm not an expert in horse racing, far from it. I've been to the Kentucky Derby one time, had an awesome experience there watching the race, but I would, having watched this replay, have never assumed that there was going to be a violation ruled to occur, not to mention one that had this much at stake. I'm curious. I want to bring in the crew on this, and then we'll get into the NBA, the NHL, and Game of Thrones as we move through the show. Polling the crew, I don't think anybody on here is a horse racing expert. So let's begin with that premise. Did you think the result was going to be overturned, Danny G? Did you keep your television on? Did you watch it all?
I did. I watched the race, but I turned the channel a few minutes after it was over.
I think there's a huge percentage of people that changed the channel just because they thought this thing was decided. I think a horse race, uniquely, you don't want all the pomp and circumstance and the prelude. A lot of times you flip it on right for that 2 minutes of the horse race, and then as soon as it's over, boom, you turn it off. And that's what, I mean, again, it's what I did. Now, I was in London. I probably would have left it on if I had been at home in the States, just to kind of watch the post race reaction and those kind of things, but I think there was a ton of people who turned it off. Dub, did you keep watching or did you turn it off?
I kept watching, but I wasn't able to hear anything that was saying, but I knew what they were doing. But it kind of confused me at first because they had all like five or six different camera angles on the replay, and I had no idea which one to even look at because I had no idea what I was really looking for. But when I finally figured it out, I zeroed in on it, and it did make sense to me.
It did make sense to you. Ed, were you watching Roberto?
I saw it, and like you guys, I turned it off once it was over.
I'm honestly surprised I didn't lose this bet having Maximum Security because of the way my gambling luck has gone of late. Eddie Garcia, did you watch? Did you keep it on?
I did because I was waiting for the hockey game to start afterwards, the Bruins and the Blue Jackets. So yeah, I watched it. And I saw the entire thing. Yeah. Absolutely.
All right. Did anybody, be honest, watching this live, did anybody think there was anything improper about the race?
No way.
Anybody? Nope. I think there are 99% at least of all viewership watched this thing live and never thought there was remotely anything improper. Thinking, you know, Rubbings Racing. Did anybody even know this rule? Because I said before, I thought that it was like NASCAR that you could move your horse and block somebody because the horses all do adjust their location as they come down the stretch, right? Somebody tries to go outside, somebody tries to go. Usually nobody has ever allowed to come inside, but I thought that was just like in a race with humans. Usually the person who's in the lead ends up kind of taking and hugging the curve. And so you don't want to allow somebody to pass you on the inside, so you're going to make them pass you on the outside. So I at no time when I watched this did I think this is remotely going to be a granted challenge. And in fact, later when I went back and scrolled through my timeline the next morning, waking up in London to see this controversy and how it played out, a ton of people initially were saying, oh, this is bad sportsmanship. This is bad form. There's no way you should challenge this race. There was nothing that was particularly egregious. And look, I know a lot of times when you come out of the gate, because everybody's so close and everybody is trying to get the right position, that there's lots of bumping that goes on sometimes from horses. And sometimes a horse can stumble or get left behind right out of the gate because everybody's trying to rush for that exact place. And I would think even more so with the sloppy conditions that existed on the track at Churchill Downs, that this is the kind of situation where, you know, a rubbing kind of situation such as this is even more commonplace than usual. So did anybody watching this live think this is something that's going to be disqualified?
No way.
Right? I mean, like, even everybody who turns into an expert, this is like when you haven't watched, women's figure skating or gymnastics or something for your entire life, except for the 45 minutes you watch it when it's on during the Olympics and you turn into an expert and you're like, oh, there's no way that's a perfect 10. There's no way that she didn't stick that landing. There's no way, like, that wasn't a triple axel. Everybody turns into an expert for 45 minutes. I kind of feel like the same thing happens with the Derby. Nobody was even on this side either. Nobody saw this coming. I think it's pretty unbelievable. And with the legalization of sports gambling that's occurring in even a more and more rapid fashion, and already a lot of people are betting on horse racing and felt like it was legal in their state and everything else already, but the amount of money that swung based on this, hardly anybody had the 65-1 underdog, and tons of people had Maximum Velocity, the favorite. And so I think a ton of our listeners right now, even if it was just a casual fun bet, even if it was just you were at a small derby party watching with your friends, I think a lot of money ended up swinging hands in a different direction here as well. We did a pick 'em for the Kentucky Derby every year in Outkick, and hardly anybody got this thing. It would have been a huge mess trying to figure out the winner because so many people would have picked the favorite because of how well the favorite has done in the Kentucky Derby over the past few years. All right, so that is a wild scene. We will break down the NBA. We got two big games going on tonight. The Celtics going up against the Bucks, game 4 of that series, and the Rockets hosting the Golden State Warriors. Can the Rockets even up this series, or will the Warriors have a 3-1 series lead? What could possibly go wrong with a 3-1 series lead, by the way? They've got that completely locked up, right?
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Welcome back, Geico Outkick Studios. Wednesday, I'm out again. I'm going down to Birmingham, Alabama to play in the Regions Pro-Am Classic there. I'm in a foursome with John Daly, which is going to be incredible, Kirby Smart, Georgia football coach, Taylor Hicks, who is a former American Idol winner, and the lead singer of Widespread Panic, And I think that's five people, but it's called a foursome, I think, for purposes of the pro-am. And I haven't hit a golf ball in on a golf course anywhere other than putt-putt in like a year. So I'm terrified how this is going to go. There'll be a big crowd of people, and we tee off at 9 a.m. In Birmingham. And I am at the Greystone Country Club, I think, in Birmingham. I haven't been there before, not played. But I'm just convinced I'm going to let down Kirby Smart and John Daly as part of our team. I'm not sure that we're going to use any of my shots. So this thing's going on Wednesday. I'll be out for that one day, and then I'll come back and tell you how I did. I've never played in a pro-am before. I mean, I've played in charity events, scrambles, like a lot of you out there who occasionally golf. But I've never played in a pro-am where there's, you know, people lined up to watch and see how you can do. Probably be a ton of Georgia fans, I would think, that'll be following around Kirby Smart. I don't understand, if I'm so busy that I don't have time to golf, how do Kirby Smart, Gus Malzahn, Nick Saban, who are all going to be there golfing, Bo Jackson, maybe a little bit more, I understand, but all the SEC football coaches, I think at this region's pro-am will have Matt Luke, who is Ole Miss's coach, Nick Saban, obviously Bama's coach, Gus Malzahn, Auburn's coach, and Kirby Smart, at a minimum, all of those guys are going to be there. How is it that they have time to golf and keep their golf game decent, and they supposedly are working all the time, and I don't have time to golf? I don't understand how that's even possible. These guys are supposed to have the wildest work ethic known to man, so competitive, all they do is work, and they got time to go play a round of golf for 3.5 or 4 hours, even if they're going fast, and I don't have time to do it. And I'm just talking about those guys, and they're actually, I don't understand what's going on there. I got to get in control of my schedule some form or fashion. Now, it doesn't help that I've got the morning show, and then I have to get ready for the TV show, and my TV show doesn't end until 5:30 Eastern. So that kind of makes my days in general a little bit of a mess. It's hard for me to go away in the middle part of the day and have time to play golf because I got to come back for television in the afternoon. But surely those guys have pretty busy days too. They're recruiting and everything else, and yet somehow they're out there playing golf for 4 hours. I'm going to ask Kirby Smart how he has time to do it. He's competing with Nick Saban, and he has time to golf. But so all that's going on Wednesday. Should make for a really good Thursday show when I get back from Birmingham. So I'm nervous, even though I'm a very confident guy. I'm very nervous about how this is going to go.
As long as you could keep up with the beer drinking with John Daly, have you ever crushed a beer can on your head?
Yeah, of course. Was I in a fraternity in college? Of course I have crushed a beer can on my head.
Well, that's what you'll be doing with Daly.
So yeah, but I don't even know with Daly. I mean, we tee off at 9 a.m. Is he just going to start getting lit on the golf course? I mean, I don't even know what the normal behavior is there. Wednesday is going to be pretty awesome. I think it's going to be very, very cool. And it's a big event down in Birmingham with the Regents Pro-Am coming to town. I've never met John Daly before. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes with him as part of our group. I imagine that's going to be pretty fun. And so that's on the horizon. But in the meantime, tonight is game 4 of the NBA Finals. And I understand we're in the Western Conference semifinals, but the Warriors against the Rockets is the default NBA Finals. And if you are a fan of the Bucks, or you are a fan of the Celtics or the 76ers or the Raptors, whoever you are, if you're in the East, I understand that you feel like, oh, we could win this thing. And if you're in the West, if you are the Denver Nuggets or the Portland Trailblazers, that series now tied up at 2 games apiece. I understand that you have to convince yourself, hey, if we win this series, we could beat the winner of the Rockets and the Warriors. Barring significant injury, I don't think that's possible. I think whoever wins this Rockets-Warriors series is going to win the NBA title. And I think the NBA is desperate beyond belief for the Rockets to win game 4, just like they were desperate beyond belief for the Rockets to win game 3 of their series. Now, tonight's game, the Rockets 1.5-point favorite, close to the point where Vegas just throws up its arms and says, I have no idea what's going to happen. Kevin Durant can't be covered. Ever since he had his I am Kevin Durant moment, I think he has solidly stepped onto the stage and said, I am the best player in the world in basketball. I understand there's probably still some LeBron guys out there. There might even be some Kawhi crew. Whoever you are at this point in time arguing about who the best player in the NBA, Giannis maybe, Kevin Durant is the best player in the NBA right now. He has taken over the mantle from LeBron James. LeBron had that title for a very long time. I don't know what LeBron's doing. He's kicking up his feet. He's relaxing for the first time not being in the playoffs since his second year in the NBA. Maybe LeBron will come back re-energized. Maybe he'll go get some new form of HGH in the offseason to make it so that he doesn't seem as if he's 35 years old. I don't know what he'll be doing. I don't know what he'll be consuming in order to make himself maybe as good as he can possibly be again by October. But what I do know is that right now, at this exact point in time, Kevin Durant is the best player in the world in basketball. And I think the NBA desperately needs this series to go more than five games. I think this series will be over in five if the Warriors can win tonight. Game is a little bit earlier. We complained the last time this game was going on during the course of the week. It is a 9:30 Eastern tip-off instead of a 10:30 Eastern tip-off. So I think a lot of you are going to be able to stay up and watch it. We had a huge gap, massive, indefensible, absurd gap where we waited all the way until Saturday for Game 3 in this series. James Harden finally got his eyes back to working, although they were still a little bit bloodshot from the injury that he suffered there. And thankfully, the officiating has stepped off of center stage here and is not the primary story now. So the question out there for everyone is, can the Warriors take complete control of this series, or are the Rockets going to even this thing up, send it back to Oracle, tied up two games apiece? Fascinating part of this rivalry that we have seen between these two teams over the past 2 years is, I believe I'm correct, one of you guys can fact check me on this, I believe I am correct that these two teams have played now 17 times. I think they've played 17 times in the past 2 years. And right now the Rockets are up 9-8 in that 17-game series. I believe I'm correct in that. It might be tied up 8-8, and they might have only played 16 games. One of you guys can fact-check me on this and let me know. But effectively what that means is there's not very much difference between the Rockets and the Warriors so far. And obviously last season, Chris Paul gets hurt, and the Rockets feel like they would have won the series without Chris Paul's injury. Meanwhile, the Warriors are maybe on the last legs of their dynasty. We don't know exactly what's going to happen with the New York Knicks, but the odds market is telling us an intriguing story, and that is that major help is coming to the Knicks. I think we're going to talk about this on Lock It In this afternoon, our sports gambling show on FS1 with Todd Furman, Rachel Bonetta, me, and Cousin Sal. I believe there is a strong argument being made that the Knicks are going to get Kevin Durant based on what the odds market is doing. There are lots of people now gambling that they believe Kevin Durant is going to leave Golden State and head to the Knicks. Now, I'm not sure whether Durant will do this, because as long as he stays in Golden State, he has a chance to continue to win championships. He's making a calculated decision that three titles, because I think there's a good chance still that the Warriors win the title this year, that three consecutive titles after he left Oklahoma City, followed by bringing a championship back to New York, or hell, even making the Knicks relevant again, which they haven't been for nearly 20 years, is a more substantial part of his legacy than winning more championships. Now, I'm not sure that's true. If Kevin Durant, and I think ultimately that will be the decision that he has to make. Am I going to go to New York, or am I going to stay in at Golden State? If you stay at Golden State, I think the Warriors probably have another title or two as long as Kevin Durant stays there, given that I believe Kevin Durant has ascended to the pinnacle as the best basketball player in the world. I'm not even sure right now. I'll leave LeBron on the side. I think most of you out there right now would agree with me that of the players that are still left in the playoffs, right? If you just look at guys who are out there right now in the playoffs, the five best players in the NBA right now in the playoffs that are left, I would go with Kevin Durant in the one spot. I would probably go still with James Harden in the two spot, and I understand there's argument about whether or not that's accurate, whether or not you love James Harden or not. I would probably slot him in at number two of the players that are left right now in the playoffs. I would probably put in the third spot Kawhi. I probably would put Kawhi there at the third spot. Giannis, as good as he is, I would slide in at the four. as the four best players that are left in the NBA playoffs right now. And I might go, as you look around the playoffs right now, I might go Jokic right now as the fifth best player. If you consider what he's doing right now in the playoffs, triple doubles, dominant performances for Denver, and there are a lot of really good players left on the eight teams. But that'd probably be my five best right now in the NBA. Kyrie's up there, certainly, when Kyrie wants to be up there. Joel Embiid, if he could ever stay healthy at his position. I mean, there's lots of arguments you can make about guys that you would slot in if you were just picking the five best players. But I feel pretty good about my five right there as the five best remaining in the NBA. And Durant is the best. And look, you can argue Steph has not been one of the five best players in the NBA. I know he's got an injured finger right now, but he hasn't been playing like one of the five best players in the NBA in the postseason so far. And that's really, I think, the question that you have if you're a Warriors fan, and probably one that you have if you're a Rockets fan right now, is the Steph Curry who showed up, I think, for game one in this series against the Clippers, and then kind of has vanished since then. And it seems like we've had this conversation about Steph Curry a lot, where he doesn't seem to be at his absolute peak in the playoffs, whether it's his body wearing down on him, injuries. This is obviously an unfortunate dislocated finger that seems to have knocked him off his game. I expect, though, for Steph Curry to be really good tonight, and I think the Warriors are going to win game four. I think the Warriors are going to win tonight, go up 3-1 in this series, and effectively close the door on the Houston Rockets. I'd love to be wrong, because I'd like for this series to go six or seven games and really give us an exciting finish. Because let's be honest, right now we're tied up 2-2 in the Nuggets series against the Portland Trail Blazers. Been phenomenal. If you have watched that series at all, both teams have been playing lights out basketball. Lillard and McCollum have been playing. I just don't think they necessarily have enough horses in Portland. We'll see if I'm wrong. But Lillard and McCollum have put that team on their back. You've got the Nuggets who are trying to prove, hey, we're a legitimate threat to win a title down the line. They both want to desperately advance to the Western Conference Finals. We'll see what happens in the final three there. You've got a series between the 76ers and the Raptors that looks like, honestly, it's going to go seven. That's the way that I would peg it right now. And then on the other side, you've got the Celtics coming back tonight against the Bucks, trying to win back home court advantage, tie up that series at two games apiece, and we will see what transpires there. So, lots of uncertainty as we come down the stretch in the NBA, but I believe this is the NBA Finals. Whatever happens between the Warriors and the Rockets, the team that emerges from this series will win the NBA championship, and those two teams effectively even. I think I'm right that the Rockets are up 9-8 in the last 17 between these two games. If I'm wrong, it's 8-8. I've missed a game or I've overcounted. Regardless, it's about as even as you can get between the last 16 or 17 games in this series. The Rockets up 9-8, I'm told, in this series over the past 2 years. Pretty extraordinary how even this has been. And the Rockets get a chance to take what I would say is a pretty strong response here to bounce back after losing the first two to win the next two, and that would set up an epic game five in the Warriors' home arena to see what's going to happen down the stretch here of what's been an incredibly even series over the past 2 years. We're going to break down this Warriors-Rockets game four. What do we anticipate happening in this one? How should we bet it? How should we play it as we get ready for this game tonight? We'll also talk a little bit about Celtics-Bucks. This is Outkick the Coverage on Fox Sports Radio.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Welcome back, Geico Outkick Studios. I do believe that the limitations for the NBA could be significant if the Warriors go out and win Game 4 tonight to take a commanding 3-1 series lead against the Rockets. I know. The Warriors have given up a 3-1 series lead before, but most of the time they have closed the door when they have set up a 3-1 series lead. They almost took a 3-0 series lead, in which case the NBA would have been panicked over the Warriors advancing with ease. I know the NBA has to already be panicked about the idea that the Toronto Raptors could end up being the representative from the Eastern Conference in terms of the LeBron hangover. The best beyond a shadow of a doubt series for the NBA would be the Boston Celtics against the Golden State Warriors. I think that's a series that would get a lot of attention. The Celtics made a run to the NBA Finals last year. They're filled with superstars. I think they match up pretty well. I think they probably are the only team in the East that has the horses to actually beat the Warriors. And I think the only team that has the horses to beat the Warriors in the West is, the without a doubt, the Houston Rockets, which is why I think the two best teams remaining of the eight are playing right now in the NBA's semifinals and what I consider to be the NBA Finals. Now, I ran through with you my starting five, for, and I understand it's not position-based. You could argue about where exactly you're going to slot these guys in. But I think the five best players in the NBA playoffs right now, in no particular order, although I think Durant is the best, right? I'm trying to say it in order, actually. These are who I think the five best players are right now remaining in the playoffs. Kevin Durant's the best player in the world. I think Kevin Durant has passed LeBron James. I think he now is the best basketball player in the world. I think the second best basketball player left in the playoffs right now, and I understand he's polarizing, is James Harden. I think Harden is the toughest guy to defend. I understand all of the histrionics when it comes to getting calls and everything else associated with that, but I think Harden is the second best. I would say in the third spot right now, and he's been a little bit enigmatic, that is, you don't know what you're going to get from him every game, but when he's played at his peak, and he has played at his peak a couple of games so far in this series, I think Kawhi Leonard is the third best player in the NBA right now. You can make an argument that he's even higher than the third best player. Third best player in the playoffs, I feel pretty good about right now. In the fourth spot, I would say Giannis. And again, he is another guy who has been a bit enigmatic. Didn't show up at all in game one, and the Bucks got run. Huge, huge road victory for the Bucks in game three. They have a chance to take complete control of this series, or the Celtics can bounce back at home in the Garden and serve notice that they're going to be going head-to-head down the stretch, maybe a six or seven game series, certainly, if we get the game four win for the Celtics. A lot of good basketball going on tonight. And then in the five spot, I would say that the best player in the playoffs so far has been Jokic. All right, anybody disagree with those as the five best players in the NBA playoffs remaining right now on the eight teams?
Well, I think in the five spot, you could argue a couple different players. I'm with you on Jokic because he is amazing, but also the signature moment of these playoffs, who do you think that has come from so far?
There's been a lot of, I mean, I think Damian Lillard. Three to win, yep, and score 50 points.
Waving bye-bye. And I know you probably missed this game because you were flying, but the quadruple overtime game between, yep, the Nuggets and Portland Trailblazers.
It's the best series by far in, yeah, terms of entertainment. I mean, every game has been high level. I question whether the Trailblazers have enough horses, so I think you could make an argument for Lillard.
Irving, certainly. Lillard, Jokic, but also one guy who goes a little bit unnoticed, Jamal Murray. He made six clutch free throws in a row to end that game last night, and he is the first Denver Nugget to have back-to-back 30-plus point games since Carmelo Anthony in 2010.
Yeah, it's been a while. So what do you guys think quickly, and we'll go back to this at the start of hour three to break it down, but quickly, what do you guys think happens in what I consider to be the NBA Finals game four tonight? Who wins? Who you got?
I'm going to say the Warriors bounce back because Steph Curry is not going to have another game like he had. I mean,
missing the layup, got seven not just, for 23, I think it was, from the floor.
He missed multiple layups. He was jacking up those threes that weren't even close. And then at the end of the game, the rim posterized him. It was embarrassing. He's not, I mean, this is the exact kind of game where Curry has a big game. He comes back because I don't see him sucking for the rest of that series.
Yeah, I mean, he hasn't been remotely close to being one of the five best players in the NBA during these playoffs so far. Durant has completely taken over for the Golden State Warriors. Which side are you taking, Dub?
I'm going with the Warriors. I think they bounced back. Remember the last time they lost in the playoffs against the Clippers, they came back the game after that and won by 27. I don't think it's going to be quite like that, but I think they get it done tonight in Houston.
The Warriors have only lost back-to-back games, I think I'm correct in this, to the Rockets. It's since they lost three in a row to the Cleveland Cavaliers a couple of years ago. I think I'm correct in this. I'm not even sure with Kevin Durant if they have lost back-to-back to anybody else. Who you got, Eddie Garcia?
Yeah, I got the Warriors. Everybody winning
going
tonight.
Warriors.
Yep.
You going to Warriors, Roberto?
And then they closed it out in Oakland on Wednesday.
Yeah, that makes me a little bit nervous. I was thinking that I was going to go all in on the Warriors tonight on Lock It In, but I'm a little bit nervous that if everybody's unanimous,
Rockets
usually we
winning.
End up getting killed when that happens. Plus, the NBA desperately needs the Rockets to win because I think they need this series to go for a while. It should be the best series of the semifinals of the Western or Eastern Conference in terms of the quality of the team. And if the Warriors advance faster than anybody else and just kick back and cool their heels, I don't think there's any way the Nuggets or the Trailblazers have a chance. And frankly, unless it's the Celtics, I don't think anybody has a chance from the Eastern Conference either. All right, this is Outkick the Coverage. I appreciate all of you spending your Monday morning with us here on Fox Sports Radio.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Welcome back. Not only did I go to London over the weekend, continuing my bionic stretch of indestructibility, but I just ran up the stairs two flights again. And I don't think there's anybody else who could do this. Not to call out Colin Cowherd. 0% chance he has the fortitude to be on a totally different time zone from Wednesday night, take the overnight to London, land on Thursday, hit the ground running there Thursday, Friday, Saturday, hop back on a flight, land, watch Game of Thrones, write thousands of words about it, run downstairs to check and see what the cover of the Wall Street Journal and New York Times is going to be, then sprint back up two flights right in time with my banana in my hand for breakfast, like carrying a football for the final yard to win the Super Bowl and be right here. If John Daly's listening right now, he's probably thinking to himself, that's the kind of guy I want on my Pro-Am team. Wednesday in Birmingham, Alabama, that's what I need. Kirby Smart, maybe he's on his way to work in Athens, listening along, thinking, you know what, I was a little bit nervous about how Clay Travis might be as part of our quad here. But now I'm really, really confident that he's going to kill it. Taylor Hicks, lead singer for Widespread Panic, all those guys got to be thinking, this is the kind of guy I can rely on. He just ran up two flights of stairs with a banana in his hand after being in London all weekend, isn't even blinking.
Either that or they will have an oxygen tank on the golf cart ready for you.
I'm a little bit nervous about what to do, by the way, for the Pro-Am on many different levels. But everybody who coaches Little League Baseball in April and May knows this feeling, no matter where you are across the country. It rains so much that you end up with a lot of rescheduled games. And so we have a rescheduled game, and I'm the third base coach. Important role, assistant coach. And we also have, you know, these Pro-Ams, they have like a night before dinner, but I'm already going to be a little bit late because I can't leave and drive down to Birmingham until my television show ends. So the show's not over till, 5:30 Eastern, 4:30 my time, 4:30 Central. And this thing starts at like 6:30. So at the absolute best, I'm not going to be down in Birmingham till 7:30. And if you've never driven through Birmingham, Alabama, there's always a city that, it doesn't matter where you live, there is a city that isn't that big that should never kill you when it comes to traffic, and yet every time you drive through it, it seems like you just sit in traffic. Birmingham, Alabama is that city for me. I drive through Birmingham a lot because we got the place down in Florida on the beach at 30A, and I... So many times, every single time I drive through Birmingham, Alabama, there is a traffic jam. 100% of the time. And I don't know what it is. And it's different if you're saying, oh, well, when I drive through New York or when I drive through Los Angeles or I drive through Washington, D.C. or San Francisco. Like, if you drive through a big city, there's a good chance there's going to be a traffic jam. But when you drive through what I would describe as a mid-sized city, there should never be a traffic jam. And I guarantee you there are people out there who spend time driving, particularly if you're on the East Coast, where I feel like you drive from one city to another more often than you do on the West Coast, where you're like, I know exactly what you're talking about. It should never be as bad as it is there in that city. For me, it's Birmingham. So I'm not sure that I can get there on time. So I'm trying to decide, I'm certain that I'm going to be late already. Should I just coach my little league game and then drive down late and just get to my hotel, check in, get ready for bed, and be geared up tomorrow? I've got a police escort to get to the Pro-Am, by the way. The police in Birmingham are meeting me at my hotel to drive me on Wednesday morning to make sure I make my tee time. And I don't even know if I'm even, because I haven't hit the golf balls very much in like a year. The golf balls are definitely not a good sign for the pro-am. I'm not even sure that I want to get to the course that early and take practice swings, because if you don't golf that regularly, you know what I'm talking about. If you show up at the practice range and you hit like 20 bad shots out of 40 in a practice range, you're like, screw it, this is going to be a disaster. Whereas, other than the opening tee shot, you don't want to – like, I'm concerned about wasting my good shots on the practice round, because I don't think there's any way – like, my wife said, oh, you should go by the driving range today and practice. I'm like, there's no way that one day in advance I'm suddenly going to be perfect compared to – I'm not like I'm very good to begin with, but it's suddenly going to make that much of a difference. So if I show up early and get loose and practice for like 45 minutes, I'm a little bit concerned I'm going to leave all my good shots on the practice range.
Yeah, you should save all of your shots for the tournament.
And the tournament, again, I'm really legitimately afraid I might kill someone in one of the tee boxes, because I've seen those tee boxes where people are lined up ready to go and they're all like kind of standing there. And I think that I might hit it like 20 yards to the right straight out of the physics on some of my golf shots, I think, are going to be rather improbable. This reminds me of the only time we really played that I've ever played with a caddy. I went with one of my buddies and we played TPC Sawgrass. And the caddy rides along with you the whole way, and it is a tremendous benefit to have a caddy. And I remember one of my shots, I was like, has anyone ever hit it here during TPC Sawgrass? And he said, no pro has ever been at the angle that you're about to hit from. In the history of his time as a caddy, there had never been somebody mishit it to the angle that I was hitting it from. And I, by the way, I did, the highlight of my golf career is that I parred the island green at TPC down at Sawgrass. So that I probably should have just retired right then and there. I parred the island green on it, and they had it at the Sunday pin locations. It was never majestic. Barely got there, hung on to the edge of the fringe right off the green. And then I hit a great approach and then put it in for the par. That was pretty outstanding. I probably should have just retired right then and there. All right, got an interesting question for you. Kentucky Derby ends in controversy. They take away the win from Maximum Velocity, give it to a huge underdog. They just had the owner of Maximum Security on the Today Show. Says he won't run his horse in the Preakness. That there is more money in stud fees, and so he's basically taking his ball and taking it home. Unlikely to be a Triple Crown winner. All of the controversy coming out. I could come on and be like really outspoken and give you some huge dramatic Kentucky Derby take. I watched this thing. I didn't think it looked that much different than the vast majority of horse races I've ever seen. And I have no idea how you disqualify here, particularly when you're in the muck like that. But evidently there are people in horse racing who know much more about it that made the decision to disqualify Maximum Velocity. Here's my question for you guys. Isn't it likely that horse racing is actually going to be more likely to die than not with every other sport becoming easier on to gamble? Because think about this from this perspective. My thesis: there is no other sport out there that relied on gambling more than horse racing. If you went to a Kentucky Derby party, you put down money on a horse, you did the little box challenge fill-in game, you got your fancy hat on, you put on your linen, you had your mint juleps, which, by the way, are awful. Not a good drink, the mint julep. And you stood around and you had fun to watch a two-minute race. When you can easily gamble legally in so many different states, Tennessee just legalized online sports gambling. Montana did. Indiana and Iowa, I believe the governor has bills on their desk to allow it there. We're rapidly moving towards, I think in 2019, it would not surprise me if almost half of all states are going to have legal sports gambling in the next 12 months or so, some variation of it. There's an argument that it's going to help sports gambling because more people will pay attention to horse racing if they can gamble on it, but I think people are already gambling on horse racing. I think horse racing might actually be hurt by gambling becoming more prevalent because it was what made horse racing matter. If you take away gambling from horse racing now, like 95% of the interest disappears. And if sports gambling becomes insanely popular, which I think it will as it spreads more commonly across the entirety of the country, is that going to lift horse racing? Or is it going to make horse racing seem even less interesting because now you can go gamble easily on the NBA or the NHL or whatever other sport you may be more intrigued by, and so horse racing loses some of its cachet? I don't know the answer to that, but I do think it's something worth putting a pin in and thinking about. Because right now, horse racing pretty much only matters if a horse is trying to win the Triple Crown. And now that we've had a Triple Crown winning horse in recent history, that storyline isn't anywhere near as interesting. So I wonder what the overall impact is going to be from sports gambling getting more legalized and more prevalent. You could make an argument, and you could be 100% right. You know, no, Clay, I think you're wrong. As more people gamble on sports, I think horse racing will become more popular. But my argument for you would be that's one of the things that makes horse racing unique and cool now, is that you can gamble on which horse wins. And that's a huge part of the way the horse race is covered. And when everything is having gambling surrounding it, and everybody can easily gamble from their phones on sports, which I think will happen in the near future, that the cachet and interest level will diminish on a substantial level when it comes to the way that horse racing is covered. Regardless, we got a result there. I didn't understand it. Probably the majority of you that watch didn't understand it. I was in London over the weekend. I turned 40 in April, went over there with another couple. We had an awesome weekend. Went to go see an English Premier League soccer game. Went to go watch West Ham United at home against Tottenham. Never been to an English Premier League game before. It was awesome. Really, really cool experience to get to see one of those games in person. And we saw it in the 2012 Olympic Stadium in London. So it was a really cool weekend. But I just watched the race, and then I turned it off because I was like, oh, that thing's over. Maximum Velocity won. And I didn't even know anything about the controversy. We're 5 or 6 hours ahead time zone-wise. So I just went to bed. I was like, all right, that's over. I'm going to bed. And then I didn't find out about the controversy until the next day. It's pretty crazy, pretty wild how that all shook out if you are a horse racing fan or you just casually watch the Kentucky Derby. But I want you to put a pin in that question and just think about it. I don't think there's an easy answer. Good question is more interesting than an answer, I always say. Because a good question can give you multiple different avenues to go down. Is sports gambling good for horse racing? I think a lot of people intuitively say yes. But as sports gambling becomes more legalized, is that going to make horse racing seem less unique? And will people continue to bet on horse racing in the same degree that they do? I don't know. I don't know the answer. It's fun to go to the Derby. I've been. Great party. Fun to drink. Fun to gamble on horses. But there was a lot of money lost on Maximum Velocity that people thought they had won. Maximum Security, Maximum Velocity, whatever the hell the name of the horse is.
I think Maximum Velocity is a bad Charlie Sheen movie, if I remember correctly.
Maximum Velocity, Maximum Security. I don't care what the name of the horse is. Maximum something. He ain't running in the Preakness. Might not run in any of the other horse races. Might just now go out to stud. Certainly, if he had won, then they would have continued to run the horse because they would have been focused on trying to win the Triple Crown, which would have increased the stud fee substantially. So that is going on in the world of horse racing. Tonight, we have game 4 of the NBA Finals between the Houston Rockets and the Golden State Warriors. I think the Warriors, as 1.5-point underdogs, are going to win outright, but I'm nervous because in earlier segments on the show, we talked with the crew, and everybody was on the Warriors tonight, which makes me nervous because it makes me think all the public is going to be on the Warriors tonight, which means that the Rockets are the play. I've got a futures ticket on Lock It In on the Rockets, so I want the Rockets to win. I want the Rockets to get it done and win the game tonight. but I'm a little bit nervous that all the public being on the Warriors and the Rockets being in a 1.5-point favorite makes me apprehensive that we're going to go back to Oakland tied up at 2 games apiece. And if that were to happen, NBA would have to be ecstatic. And I also think you have to factor in the NBA and officiating at some point in time. The NBA has a lot at stake over this going to 6 or 7 games. And if the Rockets can win game 2, then you know at a minimum you got 6 games, and I think we'd have a good chance to have 7 games. Teams have played 17 times. The Rockets have won 9 times. The Golden State Warriors have won 8 times in the past 2 years. So this has been an almost exactly even series. The Rockets know they can win, and so I'm wavering on which way I'm going to bet this one tonight. Other game that's going on that's in a big fashion, we've got the Celtics trying to come back, bounce back from a Game 3 loss, hosting the Bucks. The Bucks have an opportunity to take a big lead. Last night's games, for everybody out there, Raptors come back, even up their series with the 76ers at 2 games apiece. We're headed back to Toronto. Star-crossed postseason career for the Raptors. That was a must-win game for them. And another must-win game, the Nuggets got it done against the Trailblazers. So we're tied up at 2 each in those games as we go back to the home team now, having reclaimed home court advantage. 3 games to play in tied series there. The NHL continues to be just a total mess. People figuring out what's going to happen from one moment to the next in the NHL, good luck. It is absolute bedlam, absolute chaos. Tonight, we've got a chance for the Columbus Blue Jackets to force a Game 7, and the Avalanche are trying to force a Game 7 as well. Both of those games on NBC Sports Network. The NHL, just totally impossible to predict what exactly is going to happen. So that is where we are in the universe of the NBA and the NHL. When we come back, we're going to be joined by my guy Alex Marvez. I want to dive into this Tyreek Hill mess. There was a statement that was released by his attorney basically trying to say Tyreek Hill had nothing to do with this and throw blame on the woman in this case. This is a messy, ugly situation for the NFL, trying to figure out exactly how to play this out. Tyreek Hill probably has $80 million or more at stake, although I would imagine the Kansas City Chiefs would be able to pay him a lot less than what they would have signed him for just a couple of months ago. So we will see how exactly this is going to play out. I want to get the latest from Alex Marvez, what he's hearing about what the NFL might do and what the story is going to be here for Tyreek Hill. We live in an era, by the way, if you just deny, 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 if you're good enough at what you do, people will believe you. Because I think with the news media, there's never been a lower level of trust in journalism in this country before. So if you are accused of something improper, whether you're the president of the United States, whether you are a famous celebrity, whether you are an athlete, in the absence of video evidence, which everybody can watch, if you just deny, 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 your base is likely to believe you. I'm not sure exactly how Kansas City Chiefs fans are responding, and certainly Tyreek Hill is not helped because of his past issues, but the general rule in sports has been this. What matters is your talent, and if your talent is strong enough, then your problems won't matter. And so is Tyreek Hill's talent strong enough to overcome what I think is an incredibly ugly potential set of problems? We will discuss with Alex Marvez next.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Welcome back, Geico Outkick Studios. It's Alex Marvez joins us now. You can follow him on Twitter at Alex Marvez. Appreciate him joining us here on Monday morning. And this story continues to grow. I'm not sure where we're headed. I know it's not good for Tyreek Hill. I think it's probably not good for Kansas City fans. And certainly, I know it's a mess for the NFL. But what is the latest in what you are hearing about Tyreek Hill?
I mean, we're in a holding pattern right now because we had that letter that was released by Tyreek Hill's attorney, a copy of the 4-page letter sent to the NFL in which, you know, it cast Tyreek Hill. And listen, this is from his attorney. And Clay, I know how you feel about it. Oh, wait, you are an attorney. But the point is that
I can argue for anybody.
Exactly. But, you know, listen, it's showing a text exchange where, you know, apparently the fiance admits that she's the one that caused some physical damage to their son, and it wasn't Tyreek Hill. So that throws a new wrinkle into all of this. And look, I know that from, let me just put it like this. From a Chiefs standpoint, what's the easiest thing to do from a PR point of view? Cut the guy, right?
Yes.
I mean, it really is. So what does it tell you that they continue to stand by Tyreek Hill? Well, number one, it tells you he's one hell of a football player, right?
That's number one by far. Okay, that's right. Number one by far. Yes.
By far. And number two and number three. Then when we get to number four, we get to the fact that unlike Kareem Hunt, Tyreek Hill is actually, the Chiefs believe, been honest with them about everything that has happened.
Well, but partly that's because they haven't asked him anything about what happened.
Well, you could say that publicly. You know what the deal is here, Clay. You know the Chiefs know things. You know the NFL knows things. You know the police knows things that aren't out there publicly. I mean, really. You know, I mean, that's the whole thing.
Now, look, I understand that, but I don't think anybody knew this recording existed. So here's what I think is happening. You tell me whether you agree or disagree with this. So I'm going to put on my lawyer hat for a minute. I think what is happening is the DA has this new recorded audio, which we have played audio of Tyreek Hill talking with his fiance, the same woman, by the way, that he choked and punched in the stomach while he was in college, that cost him a scholarship at Oklahoma State and led to his being drafted as low in the draft by the Chiefs as he was. He's now engaged to this woman, or at least was. I don't know if the engagement's still on or not. Seems like they may be breaking off. The kid that he's accused of beating up is the three-year-old that his girlfriend, fiance, was pregnant with when he got kicked out of Oklahoma State for beating and choking her and all the other awful things that he admitted that he did. So, DA gets this new audio. DA is listening to that. At a minimum, at an absolute minimum, when the DA hears it, he's going to call up the fiance and say, hey, you got a problem. Because you basically sound like on this audio that you are saying you lied to my investigators and everybody who came to investigate this child abuse charge. What is the truth now? You should know that in addition to this child abuse charge, I am now opening an investigation over whether we can prove that you made false statements to police who were investigating child abuse, which could be a criminal charge in and of itself for her. Okay, so that's where I think they start. I think he's saying, and the prosecutors sometimes have what they call and defense attorneys do this too, the come to Jesus meeting, where you sit down and you say, look, here's what the consequences are if you don't tell me the truth right now. I need to hear X, Y, and Z from you. I need all the evidence that you have. I need the whole truth, the full truth, and nothing but the truth right now. And if you tell me all that and I can verify what you're telling me, then maybe, just possibly, I will not charge you with a crime. Here is the problem that you get associated with that. She is now a corrupted witness because she has told multiple versions of a story in which we don't know the full truth. And so if she is ever put on the witness stand and testifies, she's going to get filleted by Tyreek Hill, who, because he's rich, is going to have the best criminal defense attorney representation under the sun because of the amount of money that's at stake for him, because his career is on the line. And she now will be on record as lying at some point. So were you telling the truth? And I can tell you exactly what a defense attorney is going to say. Were you telling the truth back then or not? The DA will be analyzing this, and he'll be saying, man, I feel like I might still have a potentially unwinnable case because the primary witness in this case is a three-year-old. And can we really put a three-year-old on the witness stand and let us tell him, let us hear from him what happened, when I think anybody out there listening right now knows that three-year-olds are notoriously unreliable. I got a four-year-old right now. Any given day, and you got young kids, Alex, any given day, they will tell you anything under the sun as to what or what not happened, and their stories change all the time because they're kids and their brains aren't fully developed, and the difference between fantasy and reality for them is very hard to distinguish. So I just laid all of that out. Let's presume that I'm correct, that it's going to be hard for the DA to bring charges and get a conviction. What in the world does the NFL do?
Right, and that's the thing about it. Do you listen, Zeke Elliott, for example, let's use this case, you know, since it's a little bit of apples and apples here, right, in terms of a domestic violence situation, not involving a child, but involving a woman that he was with. Columbus police in Ohio investigated this, said there's no, we don't have enough to press charges on
yep.
this. Zeke Elliott denied it. It said this didn't happen. This is all, you know, made up type stuff, et cetera. And the NFL didn't believe him. So they went ahead and suspended him for six games. I mean, that's what they can do. That's the purview of the NFL.
Now, you're right, exactly. He doesn't have to be found guilty. Here's the big difference. Zeke had not previously pled guilty to beating up another woman. Because I think that's where the NFL is in such an incredibly difficult situation here. They did not penalize Tyreek Hill for what happened and when he was at Oklahoma State because it pre-existed his tenure with the NFL. But you've got a guy who has already admitted that he beat and strangled and punched his pregnant girlfriend. I think a lot of people listening to us right now, I think fairly, are hearing Tyreek Hill say, I didn't behave in a violent fashion with this kid. I didn't do anything wrong. And it's hard to believe him because of what he's previously admitted to. In other words, if you are willing to choke, beat, and punch your pregnant girlfriend in her stomach, is it totally unbelievable that you might be willing to hit the kid that eventually emerged from that stomach? I understand Tyreek Hill's people are going to say, oh, he's changed, a different man. But he didn't sound like a different man on that 11-minute audio recording. And in conjunction with what he has previously admitted he did, which is an egregious wrong that the vast majority of people will have a hard time forgetting, and in conjunction with that audio tape, it's hard for me to believe that there's any way he can play in 2019.
I think 2019 may be tough. I think you're absolutely right. And you know, when you think about Adrian Peterson, how long he was frozen out for, right?
And again, that's a one-time situation, first case offense. If Adrian Peterson had previously, before he was charged with child abuse, been accused and pled guilty to beating and choking and strangling a pregnant woman, I think when people heard about Adrian Peterson allegedly being involved in child abuse, there would have been very few people, if any, that defended him.
Right. Now, and look, the other thing, too, about this, and Clay, I'm not sitting here trying to defend Tyreek Hill, but I'm not so sure about his fiancée and the way she's maybe handling things either. I mean, we have an incident where police were called to the Hill home because Tyreek Hill is monitoring the video cameras at his house, and his son is running around unattended while his wife is asleep, you know, 7 months pregnant, and what was described as passed out. Now, I don't know what that means, if she was simply napping and just had fallen asleep and their three-year-old's running rampant, but it was concerning enough for Tyreek Hill to call the police to his house, knowing that any sort of incident like this, if it comes out, I would assume he knows, but who knows, anything like this is going to be part of the public record, and you have a police call out to your house and how it can affect your NFL career. I don't think anyone looks good here, Clay. I mean, these probably are not people who can handle parenting right now at this point in their life. And that's another thing, too. You know, can Tyreek Hill be rehabilitated, so to speak? And the fact that there's no video of this, no photos of this, fortunately, at least so far, because I don't want to see him, to be honest with you, but that's going to work in Tyreek Hill's advantage. The audio doesn't help, obviously, and that's a terrible situation. But all that being said, I still think Tyreek Hill may end up salvaging his NFL career. Whether it's for 2019, I'm not so sure, because the Chiefs, it's almost like they're in for a penny, in for a pound at this point, right? I mean, they've stuck with him so far. Unless we get that smoking gun that comes out that proves that Tyreek Hill is the one who broke his three-year-old son's arm, I just don't know if the Chiefs are going to cut ties with him right away. He's that good a football player, Clay.
I think the question is, how will Kansas City Chiefs fans respond? And
does anyone ever cancel season tickets? Does anyone ever get outraged enough to do this sort of stuff?
This is an interesting point. Not in the local fan base if the guy makes you more likely to win.
Right.
And you think about that. Before the Ray Rice video came out, people forget that Ray Rice came back and showed up at training camp, and a ton of women who were Baltimore Ravens fans showed up in Ray Rice jerseys. I mean, this is one of the all-time – all I care about is whether my team wins, the Al Davis just win baby moment. Your starting running back is pled guilty to beating, knocking out his fiance in that situation. And some Ravens fans, men are idiots anyway, so it doesn't surprise me that men would show up in Ray Rice jerseys. But women showed up in Ray Rice jerseys and were like, oh, he's still my guy. I mean, come on. And it was the pressure is often brought to bear by the national media and by the nation as a whole because individual fan bases are totally amoral. And I don't think you can give fans a pass on this, because there will be a lot of people out there who are fans of the Denver Broncos, and there'll be a lot of people out there who are fans of the LA Chargers and everybody else that are playing against the Kansas City Chiefs every year. And they will say, this is unacceptable. This is disgraceful. There's no way Tyreek Hill can play. But if you put him in a Broncos uniform, their response would be completely different. That's the very definition of bias. And again, I'll put on my lawyer's hat. I'd be doing exactly what Tyreek Hill's lawyers are doing right now. I would be sowing an opportunity for disinformation. And Alex, I'm curious what you think. I said earlier, we live in an era of extreme partisanship, and journalists in general have become so unreliable and unliked that, much like politicians, people just don't believe them. And so if you have a fan base and you just say, this is a lie, they are slandering me, whether you're a Republican, Democrat, Kansas City Chief, Denver Bronco, New York Jet, whatever you are, Alabama Crimson Tide, or Michigan Wolverine, there's a huge segment of the population that's going to believe you because they want to believe you because you are their guy. And I think that's what Tyreek Hill can exploit here.
I agree. I think the only way that the way that you describe this, you know, as far as a public reaction, that's one thing. Is there going to be an organized effort of sponsors of the Kansas City Chiefs to go to them and say, are you going to continue to advertise with the Kansas City Chiefs if they continue to keep Tyreek Hill on your team? And if they do, well, I'm not sponsoring your product, and we're going to put the heat on you to pull out. Because how else do you affect the Chiefs? It's got to be in their pocketbook, right?
I think it has to be beyond the Chiefs' individual pocketbook. I think it has to be a national campaign. People like to say, oh, I'm going to cancel my season tickets. I cannot remember any individual player misconduct issue, and maybe I'm wrong, maybe people can think of it, in the history of pro sports. I'm talking about misconduct. Mike Tyson still sold out every arena that he fought in, and people bought him on pay-per-view after he went to prison for rape, right? People said, I want to watch Mike Tyson fight, and that dude was in prison for multiple years for rape. And so I can't think of any athlete that's ever had a misconduct to such an egregious degree that people have said, I will stop going to the games. Now, you can say Kaepernick, but again, that was more political. That was off the field. That was a different universe. I'm talking about actual misconduct. I'm talking about a player doing something so bad that people canceled their tickets and refused to go. I mean, Mike Vick went to Fort freaking Leavenworth for fighting dogs, which, by the way, I think, whatever you think about dogs, I think is infinitely less severe than what Tyreek Hill pled guilty to before he entered the NFL and what Tyreek Hill has been accused of so far, right? Everything in the criminal justice system is about balancing equities. We penalize people based on how egregious their wrongdoing is. I think that what Michael Vick did was not as bad as what Tyreek Hill did to his wife or what he's been alleged to have done to his son, right? I'm of the belief that animals are a different tier than people. So many people out there disagree. They're like, if you ever treat a dog bad, but guess what? People didn't stop going to Michael Vick games when he came back into the NFL. And so I can't even – you've been covering the league for a long time. You've been covering sports for a long time. Can you ever remember a player who got in trouble off the field and a team signed him and people were like, I'm not going to go watch him?
I think the guy would be – you know, and it's funny because you mentioned Kaepernick. And again, nothing criminal there with what he did. But, I mean, that's the guy who caused people to – canceled, you know, to potentially, at least people stopped watching football for a while, right?
Yes.
And some of them may have never come back, but that was one that really hit the NFL hard.
And
you know,
that is a unique situation where
right?
It's an on-field related product issue that I think a lot of people were upset by, but that is at least something tangible that's taking place on the field during a game. I'm talking about something off the field
right.
That a player did. Now, you can say, oh, well, if somebody had signed, if O.J. Simpson had still been able to play and somebody had signed O.J., or Ray Carruth, like, is out of prison now and he was still younger and he was more talented and somebody signed Ray Carruth. a lot of times teams make the decision, hey, a guy's done something so egregious. But I can't, like, did Dallas Cowboy fans stop going when Greg Hardy was signed? Would Baltimore Raven fans really have not shown up after Ray Rice? I have my doubts, because I think that in general, sports fans are not the woke social justice warrior crowd that's going to be big on the protesting universe over a guy being employed. And so I don't – and I said this – look, it's not something unique that I'm saying. I said this when Kareem Hunt was signed by the Cleveland Browns. I said this when Reuben Foster was signed by the Washington Redskins. There's an immediate blip of, oh, my God, this is unacceptable. And then what happens? People move on to the next outrage. And so if I'm the Kansas City Chiefs, unless he gets charged with a crime by the DA, because I do think that would change things, because the evidence would come out then you've got a state government, a local government bringing charges for child abuse. I think that would change things. But if there's no charges that still end up being filed, and who knows what exactly will happen, I don't know why the Chiefs wouldn't try to keep him.
Right. He's a really good football player, Clay. I'm going to keep going back to that. A really good football player. And there are some fans, Clay, and I don't mean to sound callous. I just look at this so differently now after a quarter century of covering the NFL. I used to be big into, you know, championing these causes, okay? And you know, writing about some of the guys in the NFL who were dirtbags and how they don't belong. And then you just start to realize I'm spitting into the wind, okay? Because most fans, they don't care. I'd say the overwhelming majority. There, you have the social media outrage, and I get that. But how many people, like we talked about, really follow through and cancel season tickets?
Again, off-field behavior that is criminal, which is pretty severe. I can't remember any team ever facing a significant local fan reaction. And I'm open. You can tweet me if you can think of one where it's like, hey, people just said, I've had enough. Maybe the Portland Trailblazers back in the day, whenever they were called the Jailblazers.
Jailblazers.
They had all those. Like, and I'm not an expert in Portland, but I think that might have, like, all of those different scenarios might have started to impact the overall fan interest. But I also think they weren't winning at a high level. And so if you're unable to win, then all those off-field transgressions start to become an issue. But I can't remember a team that has, as long as they've won, that has had off-field transgressions and people have been like, oh, I can't support this team anymore.
Right. What I'll say this, though. Like I say, it's the sponsors that move the needle with the teams. For example, the Minnesota Vikings with Adrian Peterson. Radisson pulled out as a sponsor. That's a big money sponsor for this club, right?
But Radisson is a national, like, so local brands are terrified of the fans getting mad at them. So I think it has to be a national brand that pulls out because of national pressure, because I don't think locally in Kansas City, and I don't even know what the biggest local advertisers are with that franchise, but I can't imagine that many people are going to be like, oh, I can't believe you're advertising here.
And I think people too, Clay, look, they're hoping that Tyreek Hill is cleared of this, right? I mean, they're pulling for him because he's such a great football player.
In Kansas City?
Yeah.
I don't know that the nation is, because I think a lot of people in the nation are thinking this guy has already pled guilty to choking.
Just Kansas City, because he's a
good football player. Yeah,
I think the nation is
not inclined to give the benefit of the doubt to Tyreek Hill because of his past.
No. You know what? But all that matters is if the Kansas City Chiefs will, right? And they can take all the booing. They can take all the cat calls that are going to come if/when Tyreek Hill ever sets foot on the field again. Look, and we hope that the guy, you know, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me, right? You just wonder, is this guy going to learn to be a parent that doesn't abuse his kid?
Which
you know,
is obviously infinitely more significant. But in terms of what people care about, they care about his football prowess. And also, I think there's a lot of Kansas City Chiefs fans that think they overreacted to Kareem Hunt. And they're like, wait a minute, if we cut this guy, is Bill Belichick going to sweep in and sign him for $400,000 a year and beat our ass with him? Because I think that's what people are afraid of too. I think their fans are sitting around saying, wait a minute, the Cleveland Browns got a steal when they went and grabbed Kareem Hunt after we overreacted to that video. And I think that factors into this decision as well. Always good stuff. Alex Marvez, go follow him on Twitter. Monday edition up next. We'll dive back in. Warriors Rockets. I've been calling it the NBA Finals. Who wins? All that and more. I'll keep the coverage on Fox Sports Radio.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Welcome back, Geico Outkick Studios. Several things to dive into here. Big news just breaking, at least big news, I think. I've kind of told you this already. It's been hinted at for a while. XFL will officially air on Fox and ESPN, also significantly on ABC and on Big Fox. So it will be easy to find spring football when it debuts next year, immediately after the Super Bowl is over. So Fox and ESPN are going to be really big partners with the XFL and Vince McMahon. This story just coming out. Again, the AAF did decently in terms of its audience. It was hard to find their games. Only one of their games ever aired on CBS, and it beat the NBA head-to-head. Fox is going to put a big number of these games on Fox, and the XFL is going to be on ABC as well. This is from Sports Business Daily, this article breaking. Multi-year deal calls for 24 of the XFL's 43 games to be on broadcast TV, 13 on ABC, 11 on Fox, including two Thursday primetime games next April. So this is going to be fascinating to watch. But again, over half of the games, 24 of the XFL's 43, will be airing on either ABC or Fox. Massive distribution win for Vince McMahon. Only 19 of these games will air on cable, and they will air on the ESPN or FS1 networks. I think that's massive. So if you are a believer like I am that spring football is going to work, those details officially out in a big way this morning about the XFL. All right, quickly, we've got the Rockets going up against the Warriors tonight, game four. As much as it pains me, I think I'm going to be on the Warriors. Rockets are a 1.5-point favorite. I think the Warriors get it done to take a commanding 3-1 series lead here, and I think Steph Curry comes back and performs at a high level. He hasn't played well, really, since game one against the Clippers. I gave you my five best players so far in the NBA postseason. Those guys in order earlier in the show. You can agree or disagree, hop into Twitter and argue, and I probably won't read it, but you can hop into Twitter and argue anyway. Best player in the playoffs so far, number one, has been, beyond a shadow of a doubt, Kevin Durant. He's the best player in the world right now. I think he'll have a big game tonight against the Rockets as well. Second best player so far, I know he hasn't been necessarily great in the playoffs, hasn't been really good since the first couple of games against the Jazz. I think James Harden has a big game tonight as well. Second best player in the playoffs, Kawhi will enter the third best in the four spot. I think you probably have to go who did I say was in the four spot? Then I've got Jokic in my five spot. My four spot, Giannis. Giannis in the four spot. Those will be my top five in the playoffs so far. We'll see whether those numbers continue. The Bucks obviously have a big game against the Celtics as well. A lot to enjoy tonight. We'll be breaking down all that down for you. The NBA Finals, in my opinion, Rockets Warriors Game 4 going on tonight. It's a little bit earlier start for those of you on the East Coast, 9:30 Eastern instead of 10:30 Eastern. Get your nap in. I'll be staying up and watching. So will many of you as well. We'll be with you on the Tuesday edition of Outkick. Can't wait to hang. Big news from the XFL. Enjoy the games tonight. I'm Clay Travis. This has been Outkick the Coverage.